So, Bridget, welcome to At the Edge, and thank you so much for being here.
It's my pleasure.
How is being in HR and education different from other industries?
Well, fortunately for me, HR, I've had an opportunity to work in a variety of industries, higher education, nonprofit, federal contracting. And it's been great for me to come back to education to be able to share that knowledge, not only with employees, but for students, because ultimately the purpose of higher education is to prepare people for the world of work. And so I've been able now at CalArts to implement things that I've utilized in other industries to help it to be moving to the next level, to be innovative.
How has the pandemic affected higher ed in terms of HR, in terms of remote work and hybrid work?
A lot of times I think people don't think of higher ed as being a business, but it is. And so when the pandemic came around, it impacted us from one, the student experience, and then some students just didn't like a remote experience and we lost them. So that impacts your bottom line. But it also forced us to be more innovative because for the students that had to be virtual, we had to quickly turn around and provide teaching from a simulated standpoint, from a virtual standpoint, and you didn't have faculty that were prepared for that. So you had to quickly show them how to teach remotely, how to prepare their classes from that type of style of teaching when they hadn't done it before. And from a employee perspective, you now have employees that don't get to see each other because they're working virtually, but they still have to accomplish the goals. So you have to teach them how to manage their time because they're at home and having to accomplish that work without interacting with their colleagues, seeing their manager to have those quick conversations. And for leaders that are used to managing by walking around, now they have to learn, how do I manage that workforce that I can't physically see and be successful in helping them to have what they need to do their job, but also help them feel included if they are not physically in the office with me?
You know, when you're dealing with managing that process of the hybrid situation, how do you use technology to manage that?
Well, HR had to closely work with IT when this happened because we have so many processes that involve seeing people. And now we had to automate things that were once, come and meet with me and I'm going to give you the paperwork. So now we have to use things like FormStack or Google Docs and create that to be an automated virtual experience. Having more Zoom meetings, so having that technology where if I'm doing this from home, that I have the right bandwidth, the right technology, the right computers, the right software to allow me to onboard employees, to offboard employees, to teach employees. And HR as a whole, traditionally, that's not what we did from a virtual perspective, because it's also involving of people. So it required two, not only from the technical standpoint, but we had to start thinking differently about our jobs and enhance our emotional intelligence. Because when I'm doing an employee relations meeting with an employee, a lot of what I'm doing is I'm not only paying attention to what I see, what I hear, but also what I see. Sometimes from a virtual perspective, they can hide it. So I got to be able to not only hear what they say, but also figure out what they're not saying to get to the root cause of their issue. So we've had to come up with a whole new set of skills of going from being transactional to now being a business partner to say, okay, let me find out what your needs are. Because now we're in a whole nother world and I got to teach managers how to lead virtually. And maybe I don't know how to do that. So I got to go get some education myself in order to help my stakeholder.
It doesn't seem like this is going to change anytime soon, right? We're going to continue with this situation, especially in education.
In education, what I'm glad about is, you know, we hope that this ends soon, but we also understand that it's going to happen again in some format. So we just can't drop teaching virtually. We always have to be prepared that if, you know, the CDC say, hey, everybody need to go home, we need to be prepared to make that happen, you know, within a day or so that it doesn't impact our stakeholders as well as our employees. So from an HR perspective, get back to the basics. Do I know the contact information for all of my employees so that if I had to contact them via email or via phone, all that information is in my database system. if they got to accomplish their work, having the resources already bought through IT and having their managers trained to be able to help them not panic that we're getting ready to go back virtual instead of being in person. So I think if anybody is smart, whether it's higher education or in the industry, don't think this is going to be over in a year or two. This is going to really become a new normal for us, even if we eventually come back to work. But the other component of it, I don't think we'll always ever get back to being 100% in person. Because what this has taught employees as well is that they got to have balance in their lives. And they expect flexibility from their employers. So we're going to have some form of a hybrid workforce.
What's the impact on culture?
I think if we're being honest, it's impacted significantly. Because now we have two employee experiences going on. Some that are here physically with us and the other half that's remote. And so they're not getting to engage like they used to. And that impacts the unity of a culture. It impacts the ability of a culture to say, this is who we are when I can't see you. So that means that leaders have to say, I need to be intentional in managing those employee experiences. I'm investing just as much time in my virtual employees as I am in those employees that I can walk outside my office and say, hey, what's going on? Can I help you today? But it also means putting in technology for them to be able to engage, whether that be Slack channels where they can communicate, whether that be through virtual coffee chats that they have set up with each other, or virtual lunches like they used to do when they were in person. Now they can have a virtual lunch, and giving them the space and time to be able to do that, as well as giving people the space and time to just breathe, you know, because we are in so many meetings right now virtually that nobody gets the time to think. Nobody gets time to just say, okay, how can I be innovative and implement these things? Because I'm just going like a hamster, wheel over wheel. So we have to build in intentional things, building intentional town halls, communicating. We got to focus a lot more on communication without over communicating, because we're not seeing all of our employees in one space. So we have to come up with intentional learning, intentional self-care, and intentional communication.
In some of these solutions you're talking about, which ones have worked the best for you and which ones have been the most challenging?
So for me, I have a hybrid staff. I have two employees that work remotely and they don't physically ever come into the office. And I have two that are physically in the office with me. And so I protect my time when I have uptime with my team. I don't like to have meetings where we just talk about what's going on in the business. We have uptime because we share what we call the good feelings, or I ask everybody to keep a feel good file. So when someone sends them a compliment for something that they did for them, or just said, hey, I appreciate you, put that in your feel good file. If they have done something that they felt impacted the workforce in a positive way, when we have our uptime as a team, they share that information. I also require that all my team members have a power hour of learning. So once a week, they pick out one day a week where they are intentionally learning something that's going to develop them personally and professionally. And then we have teach back with the other team members when we have that uptime. So it's allowing them to develop themselves as an individual, but then to share their knowledge. And then I have intentional retreats with my employees, even if we're doing it virtually, where we just shut down the office for that particular time and we focus on what is it that's going to make us be the best team to serve our stakeholders, and not allowing other meetings to say, no, team, I can't meet with you, because I need them to understand that you are important to me, that, you know, not only as professionals to help me get the objectives of the department done, but also important to me as individuals. So I've asked them in my last team meeting yesterday, I told them to set aside time in their calendar, not only for lunch, but also for that space time where they take a little mental health break, even if it's 15 minutes, putting it in their calendar as a recurring event. And then they can send me a note to say, hey, Bridget, this is my intentional time. This is my breathing time, and I won't bother them, right? Because I need them to understand it's that important to me that it needs to be a part of your schedule. And I share with them between 8 and 9, that's on my calendar as a meeting, because that's the time I'm taking my kid to school. If you got a virtual employee and they're out sick, making a hey call, which is, how are you? And I give them a set of questions that they can ask to engage, because many managers are not comfortable in that. You know, they used to saying, hey, how was your day? But in terms of engaging with people, especially when you don't see them, they have a little angst. So in my boot camps, I teach them how to do that. I do skill drills with the leaders on a one-on-one, and that allows them to feel comfortable in it. Then we're for the employees. We are starting what's called a leadership development consortium, where I'll be bringing in leaders from each VP area to help me develop curriculum that's intentional. So they know what needs to be upskilled or bench strength or succession planning. And then next quarter, what we're going to be doing is offering that curriculum to our employees so they can sign up for that training, whether it be in person or in virtual, but having intentional learning, and managers are giving them the space and the time to do it. They don't have to be at their desk at all times because they understand the importance of developing your workforce. Don't say you don't have time. Because even though we're all busy, you're not working 24/7. You got some breathing room.
Well, it's funny you talk about breathing room, because one of the things that's happened with hybrid work is that, you know, people seem to be working longer hours because they don't have to leave the office. With academics, that must be even worse.
It is.
So how do you help your hybrid workforce manage that problem?
Previously coming to Cal Arts, I was at Albany State. And when we went hybrid, we went out in March and we came back in June, right? And so during that pocket of time, people were all working from home for the most part. And they did, just as you said, they working more hours than what they did in person, and they stressed and they burned out. So what I had to start doing was having boot camps, not only for the leaders, but for employees, to share with them resources, but also give them tools to help them to manage their time and separate work from home. One of the things that leadership agreed to do is, if your normal hours are 8 to 5, don't send people emails at 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night. If you do it because, you know, hey, I'm going to forget, taught them how to use the scheduling button on their email to send it out at 8 in the morning. Because employees felt stressed if they saw an email from their manager at 7 or 8, I got to reply. I don't want them to think I'm slacking. Don't put that pressure on them, and don't put that pressure on you. And that was an expectation from the president on down. And so I communicate that same information here at Cal Arts, because people are so passionate about what they do. A lot of times they don't even think of it as work. But at some point, they're going to burn out. And so what I try to communicate to people is, I'm not trying to tell you what to do. I'm trying to help you help yourself. And these are some tools and some resources that's going to help you to manage that. When you are working like a hamster, it's not that you got a high tolerance for stress. You're saving yourself for burnout, right? So why set yourself up that way? My goal as your partner is to help you not go there, and then tell you, hey, Bridget, I see that you're about to get to that point. I need you to step back. What can I do to help you? And I think what has to happen as well, we can't forget that leaders are employees too, right? So their leader got to be doing the same thing, because otherwise they're going to be continuing to model the inappropriate behavior with good intention, but it's still not helping us in the end.
How has employee experience changed, and how do you manage that?
It has brought to our attention that the employee experience is holistic. It's not just about providing them my in-person experience. It's about managing the experience from mental, physical, and emotional, because they bring who they are to work. It's emphasized to us that we have to pay attention to those employees that are working virtually, because they may feel I'm not getting the same opportunities. They may feel my boss is thinking that I'm not doing my job. So it's teaching leaders that they have to have intentional time for both of those and managing that. It's changed from the standpoint that people don't feel as connected, even though we're on the internet and Zoom meetings 24/7 with each other. And so we have to, again, find ways to have them to feel connected, but not always in a formal sense. Like I mentioned about virtual coffee chats or virtual coffee meetings, making it informal where they can just connect with each other from that standpoint.
So what I hear from you is that for you, HR is very much about helping people.
Yeah, it is. It is. And ironically, prior to me getting into HR, I was a software specialist because I didn't want to work with people. Right. And the way I got into human resources, my boss came in and she said, Bridget, you're going to have to teach the employees in the bank how to use your software. And I'm like, no, Sandy, I don't engage with people, especially non-technical people. That's why I'm a software specialist. Not going to do it. She said, yeah, you are. Right. So I need a job. But I was such a techie. I went back to college at night and majored in HR with a minor in psych so that I could understand non-technical people. And as I was studying that field, I found that it was a lot of similarity in terms of HR and programming. So I'll give you an example. One of my first jobs in HR was as a recruiter. And so I, as a software specialist, I always came up with a plan on how I was going to get to this, use this code to get to that end result for what it needed to look like. I applied that same concept of writing a program to writing a recruitment plan to help me to be successful in recruiting. And so I saw the transferability of having those technical analytical skills in HR. And because I'm not naturally engaging and introverted, that degree in psychology has helped me to pay attention to what people say as well as not say. But then my analytical part get it kick in. So when they go left on me and say things to make me think, am I a person? I don't get irrational. I'm really neutral. You know, I implement what I call the Columbo. Help me understand. I don't really understand. And I really need for you to be able to do that so I can provide you a solution. But I never get out of character because that doesn't help me to solve their problem. And then it's not showing the highest level of me. And once they calm down, that's well, hey, Bridget, I didn't mean to say that. I say, hey, I'm not taking it personal. I know that this is impactful to you. So let's now level out and talk about what your issue is so that I can help you.
Bridget, if you could take the traditional office and put it into a computer so that everybody anywhere could be in the office in that way, what would it look like? What would that computer space look like?
For me, even though I like my structure and I like a loft, you know, from the concept of everything being very open. But then when you get into the center, you have that brain trust that's allowing you to go in different directions where you got your communication piece, you got your collaboration piece, and then you got your piece where I can be innovative. And depending upon where you are, you can go into those different areas and pull from it like an online virtual file and say, OK, I'm working on collaboration. What's involved in that? And you pull out that library of online things. But then when I'm ready to take a break, I go to my communication. I want to have lunch with Bridget. So I'm going to have a virtual chat or lunch with Bridget. I see it being that way to allow that freedom. Because regardless of whether you are remote or hybrid, the way I see it is that in order for my employees to feel like they're included and belonging, they have to feel they can be who they are. So I don't want a program that only allows you to go a straight arrow. Whether it's a yes or a no. Oh, you got to have this. You got to do that. I want it to be structured enough that I'm giving them resources, but at the same time, they can decide which direction as long as it's getting them to that end goal I need them to be at, right?
Communication, collaboration, those are two elements you just mentioned. What other elements need to be in this place?
I think you have to have an element of structure. And by that, I mean, you're going to give people a framework in which they need to operate, but then allow them flexibility. You know, not comparing employees to kids, but just using kids as an analogy. Kids always love their freedom, but if you give them too much freedom, they rebel. And the same thing with employees. They need that to know these are the rules of engagement, but within these rules of engagement, I still have flexibility to be who I am, because otherwise you can't get anything done. And if you're in business, whether it be higher education or corporate America, you're not just there to exist. You're there to help your stakeholder. And that, those framework, that structure, help that to happen. So I would definitely have that. I wouldn't let everybody just Yeah, just be who you are. Just do what you want. Because if we all doing that and it's 200 of us, we all going in different directions. We got to have a GPS.
So how do we provide that GPS in the hybrid or remote space? You know, you're sitting there and the people are all over the place. How do you help guide them so that they can actually be effective?
So I think the thing that you got to focus on is consistency. So when you have communication methods, so, you know, one of the communications methods that we use in higher ed a lot is town halls. And most town halls are held in person, but then adding an element so that the people that are working virtually, they can be engaging with it as it's happening versus it being a review of it. So I think this pandemic has created another C, which is crisis intervention. You have to always be thinking, what's going to happen and how am I going to have the tools in there? So the same thing when it comes to virtual, how can you communicate with your employees? So, you know, like I said, having ongoing live virtual events that not only people in person can attend, but also the people that are there virtually. Another component of that is building in time for your employees to tell you what's working and not working, to find out what's working successfully and what's not, and what you need to stop doing, and letting them know whether you implemented it. A lot of times employees give us ideas and we might implement it, but don't tell them. And they think, well, I'm just going to stop giving insight, but letting them know and promoting that. And promoting it not only in your staff meetings, but one of the elements we used here, we have a lot of televisions around, right? And not only are we promoting what's happening within different events, but featuring some things that employees might do.
How much do you think you need to bring into, in the hybrid situation, people's personal lives? Is it better to bring that in more than you would normally?
Yeah, that has to be imperative now, especially in this hybrid workforce, because sometimes you have a great employee, but life happens. Maybe they got to take care of mom and dad. And because of the pandemic, there are less places that can provide care for them. Maybe their child is not old enough to get the vaccination and you got to have online virtual learning with them and the parent has to be there. So looking at how you can modify their job to allow them to be able to do that, while at the same time getting their job done. So I'll give you an example. If you have an employee that has one of those life events, you work with them and say, hey, Jane, I know you need to take care of your mom or do virtual schooling with your kid, but I also need you to be available to do your job during the week. Let's talk about what that schedule looks like. And it may be something allowing them to start earlier or later, or to have a 2-hour pocket in the middle of the day to be able to do that online teaching learning with their kid, but then they extend their hours by a certain amount of time over the week so they end up in that 40-hour work week. It takes a lot more engagement now than what it did in the past. You just can't say, you got to work 9 to 5. Maybe you have an employee that has shown through their consistency that they can do their work no matter where they are, but you still got to have mechanisms. So one of the things that I provide to employees that are working remotely, they have a little log that they put in a high level summary of what they did each day. And they turn that in by the end of the week to their leader. So their leader can look at it and say, okay, I see Bridget is spending a lot of time doing this particular task. I need them to regroup. And so when I have my uptime with Bridget, I'm going to say, hey, I need you to modify this because this is your priority. But let's talk about how we can do that and collaborate with them. Don't be dictatorial in how you go about doing it. But then if you see they're not doing what they need to do, having that crucial conversation, say, Bridget, you're not putting in a 40-hour work week. And in order for you to maintain this flexibility, I need to see some course corrections, and this is what I need to see. And if they don't, then you have to follow through and tell Bridget, you need to come back in the office. And so it's having those tough conversations that we don't enjoy having, but we have to in order to get the work done, as well as balance the needs of the organization. Because if Bridget is not doing her job, Jane and Johnny having to do it. And that's not fair to them.
Bridget, if you had to leave the listeners with one thing that they could remember Bridget Wilder for, what would you tell them?
One of the things that I say when I leave an organization, like when I left Albany State, I sent an email to the workforce. And, you know, I told them I hope that I left the work environment better than what it was before I came. But I hope to be remembered as a person that gave my best, but also that I care, because I did and I do. And I wasn't perfect, but I did what I thought was right. And I want them to remember that they have greatness within them. And no matter what anybody else says, they need to believe that. And so I want people to remember me as being that person that said, hey, you don't see it, but I see it and believe it, and I can help you to do that. And they believe in themselves and they become the best version that they are. I try to be authentic, and I want them to be authentic, because we're just human beings that are perfectly imperfect. And if we try to be better than where we were the day before, that's all we can ask.
All right, Bridget. Well, thanks for closing on words of wisdom. I really appreciate having spent time with you.
Thank you, Michael. I've enjoyed it as well.